having soul, being soul. The soul views life as a wonderful adventure, a marvelous schoolroom where all the answers are just waiting to be discovered. The world is a playground full of games, a never-ending dance. The soul lives in the present moment where everything and anything is possible. From the soul's viewpoint, I am free and loved unconditionally, always. From the soul's perspective, love is unlimited. There are no strings or conditions on love. The soul knows it is loved in this unconditional way, and it returns that love without restraints. It can rejoice in the love coming from others and receive it openly. This is the wonderful part. We can give and receive in an unquestioning, loving way. The soul carries with it no judgment and no comparisons. It lives in an eternally calm and centered present. In the realm of non-judgment, there is only peace, equality, and unity. Compassion springs naturally from the heart, for there is nothing to lose, nothing is threatened, and the person knows intuitively that giving and receiving are the same. Imagine being completely in the present moment. In this present instant, there is no judgment. There is neither good nor bad, right nor wrong. There just is. Other than the basic survival instincts that are important to keep us out of physical danger, the soul looks upon fear as an unnecessary part of life. The soul realizes that the ego is like a child in the dark. Since fear is not essential to life, then in times of turmoil, the soul will gently ask, "What do you accomplish through your fear and your guilt? Do you realize that you could be in this same place without expending all this energy on fear, guilt, and worry? Other than exhausting you, did all your guilt, worry, or your fear change anything?" To the soul, there is no death. Death and all its counterparts, such as change, are simply manifestations of moving on, going to a different level, graduation. There is nothing to fear in this. It is the natural progression of things. As S. Warren states it, to live completely in the moment is to realize immortality here and now. Mystics who have lived like this tell us that in the complete unification of consciousness, we are released from time. We are delivered from time into eternity. Grace says, "Do not hide your light under a bushel basket. You are whole. You are light. You are my son. You are my daughter. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Shine, shine. You are the light and peace of the world. You are the love of God. Let your light shine and know that nothing, absolutely nothing, not drugs or alcohol or food or nicotine or anything else can get in the way." Ah, but even after surrender, even after awakening, even after the soul and the light of God have come through, we will forget and lapse back into ego consciousness. We wake up, go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep. We become aware of our true identity, we forget. Like right now, just in the past few minutes in reading this, there have been moments of insight when you became more aware of who you really are, and then, even with this book in front of you, your mind might have wandered off to a phone call you need to make, or a car that needs to be repaired, or the conversation you had yesterday. "Well, when he said that, I should have said this." We are in touch with the deeper reality, and then before we know it, we identify with something else, We do not lose it on purpose, but we are so easily diverted from our truth. Rather than judging yourself for these lapses of consciousness, you are encouraged to accept that situations such as these are what life is all about. Life is about getting back to the soul. It is not about going crazy if you lose it. It is natural to be sucked into your body or your mind or your ego, and to begin to think or to act as if that is all you are. The secret is that as soon as you realize you are compromising your values, or being overly self-centered, or just concentrating on your pain, get back to your soul, get back to God, get back to your center, get back to goodness and peace. Judgment, especially self-judgment, does not get your soul back. Meditation, prayer, affirmations you keep in your mind, these are the things that bring you back. They are reminders of who you really are. Sometimes little phrases such as, God is in me and you, or I choose to see the good, can help to bring you back to the truth. Here is where your choice comes in love or fear, the ego or the soul. Our goal is balance. The ego does not go away, but it is not in charge. Love is in charge. God is in charge. When we transcend the ego, we do not leave it behind. It is still part of us. We can call it an illusion, but the fact is, if we did not have an ego, we could not be writing or reading this. Where the illusion part comes in is that we think our ego is all we are. Your ego is like a coat rack where you hang all your various identities. You are a human being, but that is not who you are. You are a man or a woman, husband or wife, grandmother or grandfather, a therapist, a plumber, a businessman, a housewife. None of these are who you are. That is why we say in meditation, you are not your body, not your mind, not your emotions. You have all those things, but in reality, you are the unique expression of God. You are the image and likeness of God. You are the Christ. You are the One. This is who you really are. You are one with God. In the past, you missed the important fact that your spiritual nature had power. We learned that our desires had power and our appetites had power. We learned God out there had power, but we did not have any. Shakespeare talked about the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. That is what life pretty much feels like when we are identified with our little ego and have no sense of God within, no sense of the power of spirit within ourselves. When we do not have that inner sense of God power, then we experience ourselves as victims, having no control over the conditions of life. If we have awakened to an awareness of the God within, even just a little, we have also awakened to the power of choice. We realize we do have the power to choose. We are not simply at the whim of our appetites, desires, patterns of behavior, or what other people think. When we know the power of God, the grace of God, the power of spirit is within us, we can choose goodness, kindness, graciousness, abundance, and compassion. We can choose to act out of all those qualities of God that live inside of us. The power of spirit, the power of God within you, is infinite. When Jesus reminded you of the greater works you will do, He meant the more you realize that your true identity is defined by the divine nature that dwells within you, the less you will give your power away to the little you, and the more you will choose to act from your godness. Imagine what a different world this would be. Your choice is now. How do you choose to perceive yourself today at this moment? Take a little time to go back to where we began this journey, listening to the words of Paul again. Why do I do what I hate? The answer is simple. We are living out of our ego and not out of our soul. And our soul, our spiritual nature, is the essence of who we are. The God within us is our deepest truth and our highest identity. The goal we are working towards is an integrated self where our spiritual energy is in charge. We are striving to establish that same balance of soul and ego we saw in the little baby, but now to have that balance express itself consciously. You have probably met some older human beings whose eyes shine as brightly as a baby's. Many times these are people who have reached that blessed balance and have achieved it consciously. Not that they are even aware of this as an achievement. They are not going around saying, "Hey, look at me, I have it all together." No, when speaking of having that balance consciously, it means that many or all of their decisions and actions in life are governed by their soul. Their lives and their choices are guided by the higher good rather than the petty, limited yearnings of the ego. The soul shines through. You are a spiritual being having a human experience. You are an integrated ego and spirit. You are expressing that consciously. That is your journey. That is your goal. In the written version of the book, there is in larger than life quotation marks a quote from Paul in Galatians, "I live now, not I, but Christ liveth in me." In other words, the ego is not the predominant part of who I am. What lives in me, what gives me life, is the divine consciousness, which expresses itself in terminology as being the Christ. Thank you, God. Now, I had to go to the bathroom. I wasn't sure how much time had gone by since I picked up the book, Christ in Training. I looked around. It was still light outside. I went to the counter where the old man was reading. I tried to get a glimpse of his book, but I couldn't quite make out the title, and I didn't want to be too nosy. I asked him for the bathroom, and he pointed to the back of the store, and then I asked if I could leave the book I was reading with him. He just smiled and pointed to the counter where I left it. As I walked towards the rear of the store, I glanced back just to make sure the book was still there. I came to an old wooden door. Its lines had become smooth with uncountable layers of paint. I stepped into the tiny water closet. It was immaculately clean. I sniffed. No old bathroom smells, and no flowery sprays either. Far out, I thought. After I had finished, I turned to the little sink and washed my hands, and then checked myself out in the tiny mirror. I noticed some printing in the corner of the glass. It was a decal like you would find on a car mirror. The printing stated, "Objects in mirror are better than they appear." That's what it said. Objects in mirror are better than they appear. Hey, I thought, I am not my ego. I am more than my body. That made sense. I picked up my book at the counter, thanked the man, and went looking for a more comfortable place to read. Over in a corner was a floor lamp and an old overstuffed chair. As I got comfortable, the book seemed to open itself up to the section on love. Love. A man asked Jesus, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment of the law?" And Jesus began his reply by saying, "You shall love the Lord your God with your whole heart, with your whole soul, and with your whole mind." And I thought to myself, yeah, yada, yada, yada. Not another one of these drippy, rehashed, overcooked lessons on love. But as I allowed myself to be open to the message, some thoughts began to ripen. Well, of course I love God with my whole heart and whole soul and whole mind and whole strength. And then I asked myself, do I really? How do I love God beyond words, beyond just saying it? And I didn't know. The book continued, "Before you begin to think this talk on love is too mundane, take a moment and observe your life and look at all the things that you love. Begin to notice all the little loves that get in the way of the big love. For example, you love your own comfort, don't you? Americans make up a small percentage of the world's population and use up about half of the world's resources. Just on a physical level, you use up a good amount of the world's energy on your own comfort. Is that love of God or love of comfort? What about emotional comfort, which you love almost as much as physical comfort? How much food do you eat that you do not really need, just to be emotionally and physically comfortable? Then you exercise like crazy to burn up the calories. Is that love of God or love of comfort? The phone rings or there is a knock at the door. I'm having dinner, damn it. I don't care if so-and-so wants to talk with me. I don't care if they've got problems. I'm eating. Leave me alone, you say to yourself. Is that love of God or love of comfort? Now I began to think of the first of the Ten Commandments and this booming God voice in my head of saying, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. I hardly ever gave that one much thought since there are not a whole lot of pagan idols around my house. And then I thought of our family room and this huge idol right in the middle called a TV set. And then I thought, what about my stove, my refrigerator, my computer, my camera, my guitar? Have I ever let my love for any of those things interfere with a deeper, more complete love? The book asked, has your fear of losing any of the important things in your life ever pulled you into scarcity thinking or any other kind of negativity? Has your love of something other than God made you lose sight of the fact that God is your source? Have there even been times when your fear of losing something has caused you to forget that you are completely and unconditionally loved? Has your fear ever led you into dishonesty or the manipulation of others? Love of God or love of things? I began to get a sense of this question. Is this the love of God or something else? And it was cropping up all too often. And then my mind kicked in and said, oh, come on. Being Christ in training is fine, but give me a break. I'm only human, you know. I looked at the book again and it stated, you might think that to be Christ in training is to deny your humanity. That is not true. Your humanity is part of who you are, but it is not the essence of who you are. The whole point of the training is to realize you are not just a human. To be a conscious Christ in training, you are meant to realize you are in school, and your human body is your uniform. The training is to help you realize who you really are, and you are not your uniform. As difficult as this might sound right now, your training is about being perfect. As Jesus said, you must therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. It is about perfectly knowing you are God's child. When you know that perfectly, you realize you need to let go of anything that gets in the way of that perfect knowing. Before you can become the love of God, you must open yourself to the love of God within you. You must open yourself to the reality of knowing that you are loved. And before you can know you are loved, you have to believe that you can be loved. Christ in training cannot tolerate silly drama such as, I know God forgives me, but I can't forgive myself, or I'm not worthy. That kind of thinking is simply arrogant. It is what some people in recovery call terminal uniqueness. It is holding on to the notion that somehow or another, everybody else can be loved, but you can't. When you recognize that style of conceit, you can begin to realize it does not come from the truth of you. It comes from that limited, fearful, needing to be special ego consciousness. The truth of you is never arrogant. It is open and unafraid. Your truth is humble and strong in its expression. As Paul said, love is very patient and kind, never jealous or envious, never boastful or proud, never haughty or selfish or rude. It is never glad about injustice, but rejoices whenever truth without. Paul also said, when we cry, Abba, Father, it is the Spirit himself bearing witness with our spirit that we are children of God. As Christ in training, you recognize God as your source of everything. Loving God is not an abstraction. It is praying many times during the day, God, I don't know the answer. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how this will be accomplished. You do. Please show me. Christ in training is all about praying and loving with surrender in all circumstances. If your intention is losing weight, healing an illness, asking for peace in the world, or letting go of a resentment or fear, pray with a surrendering heart. Know that the love of God is always with you. Jesus went on to say, you shall love your neighbor.